Welcome, everyone, to episode 312 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to continue with our preemptive by Felicia's. We are going to tackle the top offseason questions for every team in the Central Division. Before we get to that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. Are now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Well, hanging in there, I suppose. Isn't that like the best case scenario that you can actually say these days?
Yeah, enjoying quarantine life, I hope.
Yeah. Just staying indoors, doing the same old thing, day out and day in, and having to smile when you do it, I guess. But if the alternative is so much worse, so it's okay.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. We're basically at that stage where we're just flipping through different movies going, how about this one? Nah, we saw something similar. Getting a little bit sick of all the old action flicks and whatnot, so I think we have to go dig down deep now in creativity bin. Yeah.
Yeah, I have indulged in Netflix's new Love is Blind, or I've started to, and oh boy, is it a treat.
Is that like reality TV?
Yeah, where they cannot, it's like a group of men live in one area and a group of women live in the other, and they are not allowed to see each other. They are effectively quarantined from one another. They're practicing good social distancing from one another, which is great. Nice. And then they have 10 days to find a mate and then get married.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, that's some part. Are they going to do with the rest of the 7 days?
I guess technically, so they get engaged and then I haven't gotten to that part. I've only got episode 2. The engagements are coming in this episode, I believe. But
that is truly horrific. But I mean, look, you're the same guy who actually, when you were here, said, hey, have you guys watched, what was it?
Oh, X on the beach. Yeah.
Oh, God.
So good. I'm still mad that we don't have a version. MTV did one season, I think, of that show, except it was way, way less trashy than the British version, which was truly the highlight of my television watching career.
I haven't watched a full episode of this, and I don't even know what it's called. But it was on TV some time ago. It was another British show, really, trash British show.
Sure.
Where you had these young people basically dictating what kind of tattoo they each should get. And some of it was like really personal. So apparently, like, there were two women, as I recall, they were very, very upset with one another, and they just went to town on like the actual tattoos.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
One of them got like a blood dripping tampon out within her inner thigh. Like, it was really, really awful. And I just kind of realized at that point, okay, Brits know how to make trash TV. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. But no, for us, I think it's more like the usual movies, like the action comedies and all that, because we have two children.
Yeah, so you can't watch X on the Beach. Yeah, that makes sense.
But here's the thing, you know how completely twisted I was last night? I guess I was sitting there going, trying to convince myself that, hey, you know what, showing Bruce, 8-year-old, like Tarantino movies, like, okay. Like, and I found myself literally trying to argue with my wife, going, hey, you know what? I think he's old enough. And she was just giving me this look like, yeah, you've been indoors for way too long. Yeah. And trying to actually.
Bruce is going to enter quarantine at age 8 and come out at age 32.
Right? Right. I was going like, hey, you know what? Kill Bill Volume 1 too. That's fine. That's fine. Look, I mean, sure, you'll see someone get their heads chopped off. But, I mean, that's fine, right? And she was just looking at me.
Who among us hasn't seen something like that?
At age 8, right? Right. So, yeah. I'm getting a little bit cooped in now.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, we hope everyone out there, we hope you've enjoyed our quarantine entertainment discussion, but now we will turn our attention, as promised, to basketball. Again, with all of these, we are operating under the assumption that the season is over, that they will not be able to resume it at any point. We hope we're wrong, but that's how we're approaching this thing. So let's start more with the Bucks, because I think of any team, at least in the Central Division, if not anywhere, the question of if the season is over, I mean, you know, we've been resisting this topic all season because the Bucks were so good that we said, you know what, we're not going to focus on Giannis. It's like we're doing a disservice to him if we do, in terms of his free agency at least. We're going to, like, focus on the good basketball the Bucks are playing. But now, you know, if the season is over, we have to finally confront the question that we've been ignoring all year, which is, you know, come July 1st, which was the original date, who knows when it's going to be now, but sometime this offseason, Giannis is going to become eligible to sign a Supermax.
Right.
If they cannot resume the season at some point, do you think the shutdown increases or decreases the likelihood of Giannis signing that Supermax?
Well, that depends entirely on what the cap number is going to be, though.
Well, this would be for the his salary would be for the 2021-2022 season. Rather than
right,
so I mean we don't know what it's going to be.
No, but that's kind of the thing. I look, either way, he's going to be able to earn more money with Milwaukee, like regardless.
Yeah.
So I don't think this changes anything. Honestly, I think he's going to stay a Buck, and I think he's going to stay a Buck until the very day that he announces his retirement. I have not, you know, flip flopped on that. I think he is one of those people who just takes, like, an organization's devotion very seriously. And the Bucks did devote themselves to him completely, to his development, embracing his starhood, and just listening to what he has to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's just bound to stay there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I honestly don't know whether it increases or decreases, because I think, like, the margins are so slim for him even walking anyway, that he's just going to be, hey, let's figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's going to be fine, because that contract's going to be worth so much money. Even if the, you know, worst case scenario is out and the cap drops, like, significantly, like, he's still, that's still a ton of money. And it's a winning team. It's a team that was looking like they could take the championship.
Yeah.
What's the incentive to leave?
Right.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'm like torn here, because part of me thinks it increases the probability because they were so good throughout the regular season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he could talk himself into saying, like, oh, okay, well, we were this good. We don't know whether we would have won in the playoffs or not, but, you know, we established ourselves realistically as the best team in the NBA this year. A lot of the core guys are under contract, beyond this season, beyond next season, even, like, Middleton's just signed a new 5-year deal. Brooke Lopez is under contract for a few more years. Eric Bledsoe's under contract for a few more years. You know, we've got the core in place. So if I lock in, like, this is our team, we're good to go. You know, I know we're going to be competing for a championship realistically, at least for the next couple of years. The Bucks have been willing and able to spend, you know, who knows what happens with the luxury tax, especially if a cap falls, but whatever. But then part of me thinks, well, you know, he didn't get the chance to prove, and the Bucks didn't get the chance to prove that they could win in the playoffs, and that doubt has been lingering over them all season, and it's been the narrative, you know, throughout the MVP race and, like, just in general about the Bucks and why we've been discussing Giannis and the Supermax all season was, you know, yeah, they're this good in the regular season, but what happens if they lose before the finals?
I think that is, like, problematic. Don't you think there's a flaw in just how much has been written and said about, like, the Bucks' failings? They just had 1 year where they just didn't perform up to standard in the playoffs. Like, name me a championship team that hasn't gone through, like, the growing pains in the playoffs.
I guess. Not even the Warriors. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's not a good answer there.
Is this media driven?
I think in part, for sure. I mean, I think Look, I mean, I would be a hypocrite to say that I don't understand why they do it, because I work for Bleacher Report and we do this stuff all the time. Like, this is what draws interest in, or drives interest, unfortunately. Like it or not, this is just the way this business works, is you're trying to get people involved and engaged with your content. And if people really like the transactional side of things, then you will produce content revolving around the transactional side of things. And if that means hyper-focusing on Giannis and the Supermax, then so it goes. But yeah, I mean, I think the people who all season have been saying, like, we should be paying more attention to what the Bucks are doing and we can discuss the Supermax at the time that we need to, I think they have a fair point.
Right.
But at the same time, then you wonder, like, I mean, Giannis has given no indication that he's going to pull an Anthony Davis-esque power move.
Yeah.
But we have seen that type of thing becoming more and more common. So, you know, then you look at that and say, well, okay, you know, now the precedent has been set, we need to at least consider that this is a possibility too, right?
Now, that's fair. See, that one I think is fair. The other one, like, basically because other people do it, then we have to almost assume that someone else is going to do it. I think that is the flawed one, because ultimately this comes down to personality, right? And how you're wired as a human being.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And you can be wired different ways. You know, not everyone is going to be wired like Anthony Davis. Not everyone is going to be wired like Carmelo Anthony. Mm-hmm. And here's, at the end of the day, I understand that Kawhi Leonard leaving a championship team is what's opened up for this debate, especially because of Giannis.
Right.
But when you look at it, Giannis is on a team that is right there to win the championship. Isn't that the end goal of these superb athletes, ultimately?
Yeah.
Isn't that what they're thriving for? And, I mean, look, Anthony Davis, why do you want to go to L.A.? Because LeBron was there. He can get closer to winning a championship.
Mm-hmm.
Which team out there does Giannis going to increase that likelihood? Okay, Golden State. Do they have the finances? I don't think they do.
Right. It would have to be a Wiggins trade of some sort, like a Wiggins Giannis sign and trade, which Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report has covered. That was his, like, right away when they made that Wiggins deal. That was his underlying, like, this is interesting.
Milwaukee would flip the middle finger to that one.
I hope so.
They should.
Yeah.
This should be a damn principle that, no, we're not going to facilitate a sign and trade if you want to go there.
Right.
Like, no, not going to happen. I think Giannis is the kind of person that knows that he's really, really close to a championship. Mm-hmm. And I think he loves the city of Milwaukee. I think he loves the Bucks organization. So very much like LeBron winning a championship for Cleveland, I think Giannis is very keen on winning it for the Bucks in particular. I don't think he's one of those people who just want to go somewhere to get a ring.
Right.
I think being able to be homegrown in that sense.
Yeah.
And actually win it there, I think that's important to him.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think ultimately I'm with you. I think he signs the Supermax this summer, but, you know, it's just another one of the many, many fallouts from this whole everything is like, if the season's over, it just adds more uncertainty either way.
Right. And I get that. And I also get the fact that Eric Bledsoe and Brooke Lopez and George Hill are on the wrong side of 30. I understand that. Having said that, they're still sublime players. They've proven that they are absolutely still in their primes. You also have Dante DiVincenzo, who's coming in and being really good. Pat Connaughton, underrated. Sterling Brown, underrated. Like, there are guys there who falls in that line, age line with Giannis. Chris Middleton is still there as well. Who can sort of take over gradually those minutes of the older guys. So I think Milwaukee is sort of underrated as a team that has a future and has young players who can become something more.
Right.
I think that argument with, hey, his co-stars are old is pretty faulty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the other question with Milwaukee is that, so yes, they do have Middleton and all those guys. Brooke Lopez signed through through the 2020-2021 season at least, but they have a lot of guys. Robin Lopez, Wes Matthews, Pat Connaughton, Kyle Korver, Marvin Williams, Sterling Brown, all of whom can be free agents this offseason.
Right.
Which of those guys do you think they should prioritize bringing back? And, you know, if they lose some of them, how do you think they should round out that roster?
I think you should prioritize, like, the younger guys, Pat Connaughton, Sterling Brown, moving forward. Kyle, I understand he's one of the greatest shooters of all time, but the dude is inching towards 40. If he agrees to, like, a minimum salary deal, then that's easy to bring back. The big question to me is Ersan, right? Like, they have he's one of those it's the next year salary, the $7 million salary, is entirely non-guaranteed. It's a big chunk of change, especially if the cap goes down. So I think ultimately you have to ask yourself, if you're the Bucks, are we in this? Like, and I think Ilyasova is going to be the guy who actually becomes like the test for that. Like, do we keep him around at $7 million, knowing that he's, you know, he's a bit player. He averaged, let me just go check here, 16 minutes a game. But that 16 minutes is still significant. Like, that's, he gave them 46 threes. He gave them almost 7 points and 4.5 rebounds a game. And he's a steady, reliable shooter. Like, that's one of those. That's the big question for me is, how much are they willing to actually keep this roster intact? And that's Ersan being the big part there. Now, in terms of the new deals for Connaughton and Brown, that's the big one, right? I mean, I have no idea what they're going to ask. And I have no idea what the market is going to be, especially because the cap might drop.
Right.
No idea. Robin, I think, is like, that situation is going to take care of itself.
Yeah.
Like, Brooke is there. That's just going to be one of those weird situations that I think resolves itself, where he's like, yeah, sure, I'll take a minimum. It's fine. I'll stay along. I think he's just at that mindset now, right?
Yeah, and there's no guarantee that he's got a $5 million player option. I don't know that he opts out of that.
Right. No, I'm thinking long term. I think he opts in. Are you crazy? Look at what Setters got last year.
I know. Yeah.
Right. No, there's no way in hell he opts out of this one. Like, I'm thinking long term, he's going to stick around.
Oh, yeah. This year, just a minimum deal.
Absolutely. No. If you were asking me, like, if Robin would opt out, no. Yeah. It's, look, when you look at what he gave you how much was that? Like, 14 minutes a game. 5 points, 2.5 boards.
Yeah.
Like, he's still very, very good at what he does, especially in limited minutes. But there's no way in hell that he opts out of $5 million there. No.
Yeah, I would hope not. I don't know.
No.
Yeah. All right, Mort, let's cheer you up even more. Talk about the Chicago Bulls. Before the season wrapped up, or potentially wrapped up, there were some rumors percolating about some big front office changes that I know some large section of Bulls fans have been clamoring for years now. It sounds like at this point it is a near certainty that Gar Forman, the general manager, will be demoted in some capacity. It's basically they're going to put him in like a scouting role.
Yeah.
Well,
for now, apparently there are words that that's just going to be, you know, the start of it, that he's going to be put in a lead scout capacity and then move down to scout, and then ultimately he's going to be removed from the organization altogether.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the question, right? Is it, even if that happens, even if we go through that chain of command in which Gar goes from, you know, totally in control to completely out of the organization.
Right.
Is that enough?
No. I mean, we talked about this before. This is about a culture change, and this is about, like, basically starting this franchise over in some way. If Paxson is still there, who wields considerable control, you're going to be looking at bringing someone new in, but he has to play nice with Pax, which means that Pax's say is still going to be there. Whoever new guy you're going to bring in is going to look, like, over his shoulder all the time. Like, is that new guy going to get the freedom to do whatever he wants? Or she, for that matter. My apologies. We don't know. We simply don't know. So removing Paxson from the equation would actually answer that question for us.
Yeah.
And so far, it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. The Reinstorfs and Paxson, just there is so much loyalty there, to the point where you have to wonder to yourself if they've ever signed like a blood oath. I really don't know what he's done over the past 17 years that keeps him employed with this organization.
Right.
But I mean, they apparently believe in his vision. I'm not sure what his vision is. I don't think anyone knows except for him, which is part of the problem.
Right.
So no, I think Gar should be out. I think Pax should probably go, unless he's actually willing to take, you know, one of those consultant roles and really step back and scale it back. Like, then I'm okay with it, but I just don't understand like what the Bulls hope to accomplish if he's still in power, because then nothing changes.
Right.
Duck Collins, I'm pretty sure should also be out, because I'm not sure what he offers at this point. You know, he's apparently a consultant, and he was the one who argued against Gar, which, okay.
Oh, so but that's what he offers. There you go.
That's what he offers, but I mean, this is a guy who is very anti-analytics.
Yeah.
Which isn't great in an analytics-driven league.
No.
So, no, I would make it a complete overhaul. Yeah. And I think Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation said it best. You know, he has the podcast Cast Considerations, which is like the most perfectly titled Chicago Bulls podcast ever.
Right.
But he more or less just challenged Michael Reinsdorf, the son of Jerry Reinsdorf, to say, create your own legacy.
Mm.
I thought that was interesting, because that is true. Like, instead of just inheriting like Gar Pax and to some extent Doc Collins, who's a, you know, a close friend of his dad's,
right,
clean house and just start over on your own. Like, basically tell your father, you know, you had a good run. That's fine. I'm gonna take over now. I'm gonna build my own legacy here, because right now he's looked at, as Ricky said, just as a rich kid who inherited an NBA team. If he wants to be known as a great owner eventually, he'll have to do something on his own and not just like let Gar Pax, or in this case just Pax, run things. He has to actually take control of the organization. He has to build it within a vision that he himself develops. Does he do that? I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with everything you said. I feel like it's a good start. It's what, you know, a lot of Bulls fans have wanted, but I don't know that it necessarily changes their overall organizational direction, which I think is what they would ultimately need. So it's a step in the right direction, but is it going to cure everything?
I mean, it's not when the Bulls are asking whatever new guy comes in to have an open mind about Jim Boylan.
Oh boy. Yeah, that's not good.
Which has been reported. So,
oh boy.
I mean, at that point, if you can't see at this stage that Jim Boylan is not an NBA coach,
I
don't know what to say. I don't know what to do from there.
Is that just because they don't want to swallow the money on his deal?
No, because he's the cheapest owner in the NBA, or cheapest head coach in the NBA, cheapest contract.
Really?
So, yeah. And there are apparently some options built in, and that's on the rumor base. I haven't seen that reported, but his contract should be very, very easy to swallow, especially for the Bulls who earn that kind of money.
Sure. Yeah.
This is just about basically going outside and looking for people instead of just sticking within Iowa and former Bulls, or, you know, whoever they just have on their roller decks. I mean, no, this is about putting in the work, and that's actually the biggest thing, right? You need people who put in the work.
Yeah.
Both Gar and Pax were just constantly ripped for not putting in the work, and it's I think there are so many examples of that, even dating back to 2017 during the whole Jimmy Butler trade during the draft, when they, you know, sold the 38th pick to Golden State.
Right.
They more or less said and acknowledged that, well, we don't really have any players of interest after this level of pick, yeah. which was like if the 38th pick is a pseudo first round pick, if you catch my drift. That right, is right, very, right, very right. high up.
Yeah, it should not be. You should not be at the level where you get right. to 38 and you're like, nope, there are no NBA players here.
Correct. And that is just typical. You know, there's, you know, just go to bloggable.com. You know, that site will tell you everything. Just,
yeah.
They have everything listed. But right. it's this, I guess, indifference to actually wanting to build a winner, I think, that has fans so frustrated.
Yeah.
I don't you know, doubt that they want to win, but they just don't put in the work to thinking outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could have had so many young guys if you just gambled on them and signed right. them to, like, you know, Sam Hinkie type deals.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not there. They just keep churning around in the same field of players and agents because Mark Bartlestein, a Chicago-based agent, is one that they deal with primarily. It's just nepotism and homegrown, and it's just, yeah, it's ridiculous. You need to branch out.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if this keeps up that numerous Chicago Bulls players are going to be asking out within very, very soon.
Well, we saw it was during All-Star Weekend, right? When
Thaddeus?
No, when Zach LaVine was on the jump.
Oh, yeah.
And they started the fire guard backs chant, and he started laughing.
Oh, yeah.
Not an especially great sign there.
No, I think the players are fully aware of what's going on, and I think the players are basically just waiting for a resolve.
Yeah.
Look, the Bulls are not attractive within league circles
mm-hmm.
when it comes to players and coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And for players, it's all dating back to when Michael retired, which is, what, 22 years ago now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the way that he wanted a piece of the action with the Bulls. Like, he actually wanted to buy a part of it, and mm-hmm. he was just denied. And that just didn't sit well with a lot of players and a lot of agents, and that became a thing. Like, agents would basically tell their players, look, there's no loyalty there. The greatest player of all time just got told no in buying a small part of the team.
Right. Like,
if that is not a given, you know, what is? Yeah. I mean, Mark Cuban has more or less already said, hey, if Dirk is interested in buying something, part of the Mavs, like, go for it. Let's set it up.
Right.
This is an organization that is known to being somewhat hostile towards mm-hmm. both coaches and players because their whole organizations win championships line.
Yeah.
They're taking out of the 1940s, man. This is the problem. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. on a non, or I guess it is technically a front office note, but regardless of who's in charge this summer, Lauri Markkanen also becomes eligible for an extension. Would you sign him to one? And if so, how much would you spend?
I would sign him to one if he is willing to take
a cheap
contract.
Yeah, like how low, or what's the most you would spend on him?
Well, that depends on the cap and how things move forward. See, this is so difficult because you and I are normally in the headspace of, oh, the NBA is going to go on as we know it.
Yeah.
So we take that into account, but like because of this, we have no idea where the cap is going to end up.
Right.
So if we work under the assumption of the old cap, you know, the cap that we had this year,
mm-hmm.
I think the most I would probably pay for Lauri at this particular time is roughly $15 million
a year. Oh, okay. That's actually lower than I thought you would say.
Yeah, but I'm not going to go higher at this point. Like, look, he did not play well this year. Part of it, absolutely coaching.
Right.
But a major part of it is just losing his own confidence and.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a player who loses confidence in the way that he did, that rings some bells, and some red bells. And I would be very worried to sign him to some excruciatingly long 4-year $20 million a year deal.
Mm.
Like, that would not sit well.
That's where I thought you would come in, like $80 million.
I am not there. I will say as much. If he had finished his second season this year. And had that February month where mm-hmm. he averaged like the 26-12, and mm-hmm. where he looked like a guy who could actually become a key hub offensively, and a guy who was looking like the floor was basically 2010. mm-hmm. and good shooting, increased ball handling, then I wouldn't have had a single issue going up to 20. But the way that he just mentally collapsed this year, that's very concerning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I get where you're coming from. I mean, I think ultimately the Bulls probably will not sign him to an extension. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah, no. He's one of those guys who should go into restricted free agency.
Yeah, and I think it might behoove both sides because, as you said, Laurie did not have the year that he was hoping for, I would think it's safe to say.
Oh, very safe.
But also, you know, given the financial uncertainty, I mean, he can agree to a deal. It won't really matter what he agrees to because, like, it'll be based on the 2021 cap. So that right. part is fine. But there's just so much uncertainty on both sides, regardless of also, like, this looming, oh, we don't know what the cap is going to be and we don't know what the long-term side effects are.
Right.
Yeah, I think it probably just makes sense for both sides to table this thing until 2021.
Consider also this for a moment. He's played three seasons, mm-hmm. and I understand that, you know, this season was shortened because of the coronavirus, mm-hmm. but he's played 170 games. In a way, he's almost lost a full year due to injuries.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a lot, so that needs to be taken into consideration as well. And the mere fact that he had, like, a career worst season after the year that he had, where he dropped down 4 points per game and almost 3 rebounds, mm-hmm. like, that drop is not something you just see out of the right. blue. Especially at that age. Like, yeah, I could see his numbers decline a little bit. Like, that's probably, you know, pretty consistent with many players in that age group. Mm-hmm. But 4 points and 3 rebounds a game?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nerve-wracking.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's go to the Cleveland Cavaliers. First question, again, it's going to be somewhat tricky to answer because of the financial uncertainty, but, I mean, they just traded for Andre Drummond at the trade deadline. He has, I believe it is a $28.8 million player option, somewhere around there, mm-hmm. For the 2020, next season, basically. He can opt out, become a free agent, become one of the best free agent centers on the market, or you can opt in, decide to become a free agent in 2021. What do you think the Cavs should want him to do?
Opt in. Opt in. Why not? Just get some quality on that roster. Have a big that the guards can play off of. And basically have Andre Drummond playing a full year for, yeah, what is it they gave up? John Henson and what?
Yeah, like nothing.
Virtually nothing.
Yeah.
So you get a whole free year of Andre Drummond, you know, not counting the actual money that they have to pay him, but mm-hmm. you know what I mean.
Right, right. You get just, a look at him.
You get a long look at him,
yeah.
And you get production, and I think it's so important for their young guys, like Colin Sexton, Darius Garland in particular, mm-hmm. that they have a guy who is in a win-now mode. Yeah, he's mm-hmm. not the perfect player. He's going to make mistakes. He is going to mentally check out of games here and there. Mm-hmm. But he is still a very, very good talent to have. Like, he is going to make your team better when he's engaged. And I would be surprised if he alone didn't squeeze out a couple wins.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. At that age, I think it's important for Sexton and Garland to experience some level of success. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And look, full disclosure, I have an interview coming out with Colin Sexton in the near future. I'm just wrapping it up with his publicist. But he did say something pretty interesting about playoff expectations moving forward, which you'll read about at Forbes when it comes out. But
okay.
Point here being, Sexton is not of the mindset that this team is going to be rebuilding next year.
Really? Interesting.
Yes.
Okay. Huh.
So from that point of from that perspective, it makes sense to keep Drummond around.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I guess that segs into the other big question that's been hanging over them throughout this season, really since the minute he signed that extension, was Kevin Love. why? Like, what purpose does he serve on a team of young 20-something guards especially. Do you think they'll be able to move him this summer, or should they want to move him this summer? Or, I guess, I mean, if Colin Sexton is of the mindset that they are not rebuilding, do you think they don't look to move him and actually look to contend for a playoff spot with this current roster?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's the latter. I understand that that's maybe not what Cleveland fans would want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you also just got to try to win, right? At some point, you're just going to try to do something else.
Yeah.
Kevin, even though he's probably not going to have any sort of trade value, is still a good player. I mean, we've spoken about this before. You know, we look at Kevin Love and we mostly talk about him as if he's just a contract. Mm-hmm. Like, Kevin Love is good.
Yeah.
He averaged 18 points, 10 rebounds, hit 2.5 threes. Like, and he's a good passer, 3 assists per game. He's not going to be a defender. He's not going to be someone who breaks you down off the dribble. He's not going to be all of that.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to be a reliable offensive player, a great rebounder, and a playmaker for you. Offensively, he can do a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you just lean into that and go, you know what, it's fine. We got Drummond, we got Love, we got Sexton, we got Garland, so we've got some weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, you can move forward with that for a single year and see what it takes you, and then if nothing works, you can pivot in 2021.
Right.
That would make sense as well, because then his contract is just shorter, so it would be presumably easier to move by then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we're assuming that he's not going to like mope through the season like he did this year.
Right.
Because that decreased his trade appeal and really his value on the floor as well.
Right.
So yeah, this is operating under the assumption that we don't get mopey Kevin Love, but...
Well, I mean, John Beilein isn't there anymore, so...
Yeah.
Right.
That's true. And they have... Yeah, they assigned Bickerstaff to a multi-year extension, if I'm remembering correctly, like...
Correct, yeah.
Right before all the NBA went away. So they have their coaching staff in place. Like, there's no mystery as to who's going to be coaching the team next... Well, who knows? But in theory, they have their coaching staff in place, so there will be no mystery in the regard of who is coaching the team.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cavs fans have been of the mindset that this breakup was coming for a long time. So if it doesn't, it might be disappointing in that regard. But I could see, I mean, it would make sense if they're saying, hey, we're going to try to compete right now. It would make sense for them to say, okay, well, then Kevin Love is probably going to help us more than, like, we're not going to get anything of value for Kevin Love, most likely.
Right.
I mean, we're most likely going to have to swallow a bad contract to get off of him, or, I mean, maybe you can get, like, just trade one bad contract for another and find a helpful player. Like, you brought up Al Horford last episode, maybe you can pull off something like that, but that seems like the absolute best case scenario at this point.
Wait, so Horford for Love?
Yeah.
So you want Cleveland to go into the season with 3 centers?
Who's the other one?
Tristan Thompson.
Well, I mean, he's a free agent.
I know, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's the other guy, like, again, the market was already going to be bad because few teams have cap space.
Right.
Now, even fewer teams have cap space. So
right.
It feels like Tristan's realistic options are... I mean, there will be a couple teams with cap space still, regardless of how far the cap falls. But even still, it's not going to be... Like, Atlanta doesn't need a center now. They just got Clint Capella. So the team's in need of... center, it's like the Knicks. Like, if he can, if he's willing to take the Knicks money, that's about it. But I mean, realistically, his options are probably re-sign with Cleveland, or take one of the two exceptions, mid-level or taxpayer or whatever, mm-hmm. or get a sign and trade.
And they have full bird rights on him.
Yeah.
So they can go over the cap as well.
Yeah.
To re-sign him. So maybe there's some advantage in there and basically saying, to Tristan, hey, you know what? What about returning on a one-year deal that's kind of really balloon deal?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you want to come back for, let's see here, what, like 1 year 20?
Yeah.
I mean, why not? If they're going for it, they're going to need Tristan Thompson unless, you know, they find some sort of sign-and-trade deal. But look, I like Tristan, but who out there is going to trade you a positive asset for the right to pay him?
Right. Yeah, I don't think you get much for him.
Right. Maybe at this point, you just got to ask and gauge within yourself, where do I get the most level of talent? Is that keeping Tristan around, you know, re-signing him?
Mm-hmm.
Or what's the play here? Because like you and I have said over the past couple of weeks now is, you know, players with player options, they're definitely going to opt in now.
Right.
So many players are going to opt in. So even if, you know, Cleveland could afford someone, like, they're not going to be a whole lot of people on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And they got Larry Nance, too. That's a fourth center right there if they get Horford. Like, no. Man, I don't know. They need to do something at least.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a...
I completely forgot about Larry Nance here.
Yeah. They're in a weird spot. That's a lot of picks. I mean, in, like, just in the roster building perspective and all of this uncertainty hanging over them is not going to help matters.
I mean, see, this is where it's really frustrating that the season won't have a conclusion, because let's assume for a second that the Houston Rockets failed in their small ball attempt and they needed like a big.
Yeah.
Larry Nance Jr. would make a ton of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah.
Or any of their bigs. I mean,
any of their bigs. Well, Larry Nance, because he can actually shoot.
Sure, yeah. But like, if they wanted to bring back a cheaper Clint Capella facsimile, maybe they're the team that signs and trades for Tristan.
Yeah, that's true. And well, he can rebound, that's for sure. He's not the same rim roller. He's definitely not the same shot blocker, but... Yeah. Now, see, this is it, right? Like, we simply don't know, like, the needs of teams. Like, teams don't even know fully what they need because they didn't go through the ringer with them. They didn't go through the playoffs. Teams are just going to go, hey, we didn't test these things out. We have no idea what we need.
Mm-hmm. And I guess for Cleveland, the other question is, I mean, right now, if the season does not resume, they are projected to have the number 2 overall pick. Who should be on their radar, at least?
Well, that depends on who wins number 1. If Golden State wins number 1 and they actually take James Wiseman, mm-hmm. which they really shouldn't, then Anthony Edwards will fall right into their laps, and they should go that route. If someone else takes Edwards at number 1, I'm going to get flamed for this. They should probably look at Denny Avdija. At number 2.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
No, I like him. I really like Denny. I think there's a lot of upside there. The thing is, though, you have to be really patient.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't really align with them maybe wanting to make the playoffs.
Yeah, sure.
And if you really want to strengthen your defense instead, whereas you would draft for need, Isaac Okoro from Auburn would make a lot of sense. He's not really a scorer, but he is a guy who is going to be a game changer defensively,
mm-hmm.
which they really need.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are a couple directions they could go. You know, if they win number 2, or win number 2, if they get number 2, it would also be interesting to see if they can trade down and pick up several assets. Because if they get down and maybe, you know, get 2 picks later on the first round, maybe Okoro drops, at which point they can get him a little bit later. Like, there's a lot. There are a lot of opportunities that could present themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that idea.
I think it would be good. They need a wing. That's for damn sure, though.
Right. You're not team Chetty Osman?
Well, I like Osman, but not as, you know, your primary 2-3 or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's fine as a complimentary guy, but, you know, 11 points, 3 rebounds a game in almost 30 minutes, that's just not enough. And he's not really a defensive stalwart either. So you need more. You just need more. Right. Kevin Porter can become something, but he's just so young. Has he even turned 20 yet? I don't think he has. No, he's still 19. So yeah, there is some potential there, but you need something.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And before you ask, I am not Team Dante Exum.
I wasn't even going to ask.
Good, because I am not there. I hope that I'm wrong, but no.
Yeah. All right, let's go into Indiana now, because they're another team where this season is going to leave some unresolved answers, regardless, I think, of whether it comes back or not. Mm. I mean, we knew this was always going to be a weird year for them, because Oladipo was recovering. He wasn't going to make it back until the middle of the season. We probably weren't going to see the best of him until the following season. So I don't think they would have answered this question either way this year. And, you know, again, maybe the playoffs come back and they get a chance to. But do you think this team, as currently constructed, with, let's assume, a fully healthy Oladipo, like back to his all-star form, Oladipo, do you think they are a championship contender?
What version of Miles Turner am I getting?
The same version that showed up his entire NBA career?
So the inconsistent, you want to pull your hair out on occasion because of his complete lack of offensive interest?
Yes.
Yet still frustratingly good defensively?
Correct, yes.
And what about Jeremy Lamb? What am I assuming here? Because that injury was
significant. I mean, he's out. We're assuming he's out for at least some of next season, if not a considerable chunk, right?
Yeah. Look, Jeremy Lamb shouldn't be the one who decides my fate.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's a big loss.
I think he's a
really, really big loss. I don't think you're a championship contender with that roster. I think you can be really, really good. I think you can be better than Philly. Sorry.
Yeah,
I think
you can. That's not a high bar right now.
And I think you can be in that conversation, like in the upper tier of the East's elites. Especially if Depot, like you said, is back for, you know, what we know him as. But he's going to be a free agent in 2021.
Right.
So that could be like one of those years where the narrative is all about, oh, is he going to come back? Which, you know, can sometimes affect like the way the teammates and players are kind of looking at the flow of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're really good. I'll say as much. I think TJ Warren is underrated. I think Sabonis is rightly an all-star, and I think he's only going to get better.
Yeah.
I like TJ McConnell if he's kept around. I think Goga is going to have a couple big years in him moving forward. Hey, man, even Edmund Sumner showed some game here this year. So I think there is something there to their bench. They just need a little bit more, and then I wonder if their top-tier talent is enough.
Mm.
Like, who do you go to in the playoffs as your key guy? Like, Oladipo? Okay. Is he good enough?
Right.
And I love him, by the way.
Yeah.
I just wonder if he's ever going to be like the best player on a championship contender.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, I don't think we would have gotten the answer to this question even if the playoffs resume, because we're not, as you said, we're not going to see Lamb this year if the playoffs do come back. We're not going to see fully healthy Depot yet, I don't think. I agree with you that if I had to say right now, the Pacers probably are one tier below, like, legitimate championship contender. That isn't to say they aren't really good or that I would want, like, no team should be excited to draw them in the first round. I think they're not going to be a pushover by any means. It's just, I don't think they're quite, like, could they beat Milwaukee in a 7-game series?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No. No, let's just nail that right immediately. No.
So then, how? I mean, that leads to one of two questions, one of which is like the question that's been hanging over Indiana for years now is, you know, Miles Turner, Sabonis, you have to choose between one or the other. The other one, I think, which you know, similar to Giannis, we haven't discussed this at all because it was far enough away that we didn't need to, but now we're getting closer. As you mentioned, Oladipo is a free agent after the 2020-2021 season. Should the Pacers at least approach him about an extension this summer? Should he be willing to sign an extension this summer? Or is there too much financial uncertainty now on either side for it to make sense?
Well, that, yes, there is. But at the same time, there's also this thing that he's actually having to, you know, get used to playing in the NBA again. Mm-hmm. He's played 49 regular season games combined over the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a lot of NBA basketball.
Nope.
So, like, if you offer him an extension, you better be damn sure that he is game ready when the next season starts.
Mm-hmm.
And not in a, oh, I'm going to need 6 months to get back. No, he needs to be ready immediately.
Yeah.
So I actually have a, this is not a hot take. This is a hot question.
I'm about excited. Depo, okay.
Was he a flash in the pan?
Ooh, that is hot. Ooh.
I know, but look, in last season when he played the 36 games before going down,
yeah,
he wasn't necessarily great, Brian.
Hmm. So you're saying, you're asking if that one All-Star season was, yeah, an outlier?
Look, when I'm looking at his numbers throughout his career,
mm-hmm.
I'm only seeing 1 year that stands out. Look, I don't want to be that guy. You
right,
know,
right,
I like
right.
Oladipo. I think, you know, outside of being a very, very good NBA player, personally, like when you listen to him speak and when you hear about him, what he does for the community, like he is objectively an awesome guy, like
right.
an awesome human being.
Right.
So I actually hate even asking this question, but we're an NBA podcast. So
yeah. No, I mean, that would be the $100 million question for the Pacers, right?
It would.
Because, yeah.
I just don't.
If they're not sure that Victor Oladipo of 2017-18 is coming back at all, then I think you shut down extension talks immediately.
Right. My thinking was just, when you look at last year,
mm-hmm.
the 18.8 points year and the overall stat line and the way that he played,
mm-hmm.
I could probably see him do somewhat similarly in Orlando. I don't think that was necessary. I thought he would like continue to be a high scorer
mm-hmm.
and a very impactful defender, and he just seemed to kind of not be that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I don't know. But, you know, I will be fair, though. Before he went down with the injury,
mm-hmm.
he also did have, I think it was it a 9-10 game thing? In the middle of the year?
This year, you mean? Or last year?
The last year when he played the 36 games. I think he had an injury. You know, I think he had two injuries.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of took him out for a while. The first one, not so bad. He missed, like, I think it was between 8 or 10 games. Let me just look it up.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4. I have it right here. Yeah. 11 games, it seems like, and then he went out after 4 minutes against Atlanta. Yeah, I don't remember the injury,
mm-hmm.
but I remember reading about it. So I don't know if he was like banged up afterwards.
Mm.
That could have affected the way that he played. But before he went down, not counting the Atlanta game where he did go down,
mm-hmm.
he was averaging almost 23 and 7 boards and 5 assists. So that was on pace for what he did the year before. Then he came back, and then he played, 16 points a game, 5.5 assists, only shot 40% from the field, and then he had the horrible injury against Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that injury initially just kind of set him off.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Hmm.
I mean, those are the questions that you need to ask, which was your point
sure.
all along.
For sure. I'll say this. I mean, in terms of, is there too much uncertainty for, I mean, there might, it might be as similar to a Markkanen situation with the Bulls, right? Where it's there's too much uncertainty on both sides. Like maybe the Pacers wouldn't want to sign him to a max extension right now because they just aren't sure what version of him they're getting. And maybe Depot wouldn't want to sign anything less. Like maybe he's willing to gamble on himself.
Like if you can be professional about it and him gambling on himself doesn't really lead to any animosity, mm-hmm. then go ahead. I think that would be fine. If the sides can meet up after that prove it year and like Depot proves himself, the Pacers go, well, you did it, here's your money.
Right.
That would be great, as long as there aren't any lingering bad feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
He's not as easy to peg moving forward, right?
No, definitely not. And I mean, it's worth noting too that if he signed an extension this summer, he'd be limited to 120% of what he earned this past year, which is $21 million. So his starting salary for next season maxes out at $25.2 million. Now,
oh no, how will he feed his
kids? I know, really going to be a tough life for him. Yeah. Again, we don't know what the cap is going to be. I don't think that would be his max salary by any stretch of the imagination come 2021. Right. So he would, if he thinks he's a max player in 2021, he should not take an extension. It's as easy as that. If he has some lingering doubt in his mind, then I think the conversation opens up a little bit.
I have a question for you here, because this is the interesting part. Even if you take Victor Oladipo, like the All-Star season, the first All-Star season, the 23-point-a-game season, is that player, because we talk about the max contract really should only be given out to like a select few.
Sure.
Is that version of Oladipo closer to, and let's use this in like in Philadelphia terms, is he closer to Tobias Harris than it is Joel Embiid?
Ooh, that's interesting. Yeah, I would think so, right?
I'm leaning towards that, but I also I don't want to underplay it. Like that season, he was really good. Obviously, better than Tobias has ever been.
Right, definitely.
So that's I'm not arguing that he was somehow like equal to Tobias. Like clearly better, but if there's this spectrum of space where you have Tobias on one side, you have Joel Embiid, who's a clear-cut max guy, on the other, like where does Depot fall?
Right. Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I think he's probably closer to a Tobias than...
Right.
And that's just saying, I mean, again, this goes back to the theory of, like, there too many guys get max contracts.
Right.
And that, you know, like, Tobias Harris should not be a max player. It's as easy as that. I know he's not. He took $10 million less, whoop-de-doo. But right. You know, you could even, I mean, frame it even like, who would you rather pay that much money, Chris Middleton or Victor Oladipo?
Yeah, that's going to be Chris.
Yeah, and that's not, again, that's not a slight on Middleton. But, like, you know, at least Middleton was an all-star. Like, Tobias, I think, was a clear overpay. Middleton is a good player. It's just... You know,
and they're the same age, right?
I feel like Oladipo is a little younger, right?
Well, it's not by much.
Yeah.
Less than a year.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And like Middleton's got better positional size.
Sure.
And I want to argue, and that's not even an argument, is the better shooter.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that one's not even close.
Man, look at how underrated Chris Middleton really is.
I know. I'm glad
that we've
been on the Chris Middleton stand train for a while.
Yeah. This is ridiculous. Like the more that I look into his numbers and like just it really becomes obvious to me that this dude is being perceived as someone who is like several layers below A. Oladipo.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, you could absolutely make the case that he is better.
Well, and I mean, another question with Oladipo is the Pacers could ask themselves, like, because I think you could ask yourself the same about Middleton, right? Can he be the number one option on a championship team?
No.
Can Victor Oladipo?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, no. I would agree. But, I mean, again, that's where you're running into, like, should we max this guy out? Should we give him a near max? Like, I think, frankly, $25 million, I think it makes sense for the Pacers if they can get Oladipo to agree.
Yeah.
Like, $25 million for Victor Oladipo or whatever that ends up being, that's a pretty reasonable – I would be okay paying that.
Right. And then if he bottoms out at, like, you know, the somewhat 19, 20 points, that he doesn't really regain his touch from 17-18 season.
Mm-hmm.
You can sort of live with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a much less painful mistake than the alternative.
Maxing him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, boy, let's end on a very uplifting note and talk about the Detroit Pistons, who... Right. who began what figures to be a long teardown at the trade deadline when they sold Andre Drummond for peanuts. The one bright side is your boy Christian Wood, who you anointed as a potential most improved player.
Oh, no. No, no.
Oh, sixth man of the year?
Both? No, no. No, no. You said possible.
Oh, yeah.
I had him as my pick, man.
Right, that's true. That is true. And it turned out to be a pretty good pick. I mean,
you want to hear who I have for next year's MIP, because I already made up my mind.
Oh, really? Yeah, who?
Troy Brown Jr.
Oh, God damn it. Of course. Of course. Well, we'll get there. I guess we'll get there in the next episode. But
yeah. I'm just letting you know right now, and you're going to be like, "Ugh."
Yeah,
100%. You like this guy. You've liked this guy for so long,
yep.
But because of my track record with this, you cannot anymore get in doubt. Come on,
I know that's the worst part of it all. but Christian Wood, yeah. I want to double check here. I believe he doesn't even have a team option, right? He's just a completely unrestricted free agent.
Completely unrestricted.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, so. I'm assuming the Pistons will want to re-sign him because he filled in very well. Even in limited minutes earlier this year behind Drummond, his per 36 rates were great. And then when he took over for Drummond after the trade deadline, he basically maintained his per 36 averages in a much greater number of minutes. So
right.
I'm not going to ask, should they re-sign him? Because the obvious answer is yes. How much should they be willing to pay him?
No idea. So I actually wrote an article about Wood for Forbes where I actually ended up basically saying, well, he's in for quite the race.
Mm-hmm.
But and I actually avoided trying to guess part because of, like, we don't know where the cap is.
Sure.
But also because I just have no idea how NBA teams view this guy. Look, here's the thing. He's had excellent per 36 numbers throughout the course of his career. Last year, even before he hit Detroit, like, it was apparent, at least for a few people, that he was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, unless I'm mistaken and I'm remembering this wrong, 14 teams decided not to claim him when he was waived.
Mm-hmm.
That to me means that either teams aren't doing their homework, or their perception of a certain guy is just flat out wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea if teams are looking at Wood and going, well, it's 1 year. He needs to prove us more.
Oh.
Which I hope isn't the case.
Because yeah, I can't imagine after this year.
Right? But I still have that lingering feeling because I understand that he didn't play a whole lot in his first couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I have it right here. He only played 51 games before going to Detroit. I understand that. That's a very limited sample size. And I'm not suggesting the team should break the bank for someone like him. But this dude couldn't even get a full-time roster spot. Even here in the training camp into this season, like, it was him and down, you know, it was him versus a 38-year-old Joe Johnson who hadn't played in over a year.
Right. Yeah.
Like, on some level, this just became blatantly ridiculous.
Right.
And I just wonder if teams are still stuck in that mindset or he proved enough. If he did, I just don't know. He's long. He can shoot. He can get to the free throw line. He's got a little bit of Anthony Davis in him without being AD. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like slender 6'10", huge first step. And the way that he covers ground, Brian, this is why I really liked him. The long legs.
Yeah.
He had a couple of these in Detroit where he would get the ball at the three-point line. And he would get a defender sort of in the air by just basically doing a quick pump fake because mm-hmm. he is a three-point threat.
Mm-hmm.
And he would take this huge first step and this stride would just carry him towards the basket. And it was so quick that I was just sitting there just going, this is where he separates himself. Like,
yeah.
He can get to the basket in like under a second from outside the free throw line. It's ridiculous how quickly he can get from point A to point B. And I think with him having played just 1,300 minutes of like rotational minutes now mm-hmm. over a course of a season, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to unlock still.
Sure.
I mean, he's still testing himself out. I feel like you have to go up and play at least 2,000 minutes a season to really understand, oh, this is the player that I am moving forward, you know?
Yeah.
So what kind of team fits him? That's my next question.
Mm.
Like, does he go to a rebuilding team because he's only 24?
Mm-hmm.
Or because he's already productive, is he a guy who, like, you look at as, well, we're not quite a contender, but we're a playoff team, so maybe if we get this guy, that'll be the final push?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And because if you go with the second round, that's probably a little bit more limited budget. Ooh. So it depends what kind of team are you looking for.
I just had a terrible thought. Felt a great disturbance of the force when this dawned on me.
Oh, no.
But we know Miami has been loading up for 2021 for yeah. Giannis and whoever else.
Right.
And I've been teasing at the idea, if Giannis signs a Supermax this summer, maybe Miami pivots and realizes, again, this was all like assuming the salary cap doesn't fall to right. ridiculous levels. But, you know, they were basically the only good team projected to have cap space this summer, so they theoretically could have had their pick of the litter. Christian Wood and Bam Adebayo together would be terrifying.
There's actually some credence to that idea for the one reason. Christian Wood and Kendrick Nunn share an agent.
Oh. Well, there you go. I didn't even know that. Oh, boy. God, please no. Don't. No one from Miami listen to this podcast. I don't want to plant any ideas, but I mean,
that would be fantastic, though.
Yeah, like, that might be the perfect. I guess Dallas, too, with Wood and KP.
Yeah, that would be great. I do think, though, for Dallas specifically, I actually want to lean into, like, more of a traditional three-man who plays the four because they have Porzingis at the five.
Yeah, yeah.
However, fair. Christian would be one of those rare exceptions just because he has one of those do-it-all kind of offensive packages.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Luka would hit him as a roller, as a popper. Like, my God, just imagine Wood playing off of Luka.
I know.
Right? But to your point about Miami, there's something else there that could be really interesting. Wood, as we know, has been used to just working his ass off just to earn a roster spot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Who is going to appreciate the living hell out of that?
Oh, boy. God. Yeah. Yeah. Hashtag heat right? culture.
Hashtag heat culture. Hashtag Jimmy got buckets, right?
Yeah.
This Jimmy would love him.
Yeah. That's true. That is true.
They would be peas in a pod, those two.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to be one of the like low-key most interesting free agents. Again, not right. knowing what's going to happen. Maybe no one will be an interesting free agent because the cap will fall by $20 million and no one will have cap space. But right. you know, hypothetically, assuming they don't have the cap fall to a ridiculous degree and
yeah.
the teams that we thought will have cap space will still have some cap space, just less. Yeah, I mean, Wood is definitely one of those guys who he's not going to have the name recognition of, you know, a DeMar DeRozan who was teasing with opting out, or like a Danilo Gallinari even. But
which is so fun because I would legitimately make the argument that just a year from now, Wood could actually be better than DeRozan.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, especially at the respective price points that I would think both guys will
right, demand. Right, right, yeah. On a per dollar basis. You know what's really funny, though? We're supposed to be talking about Detroit, but we're just talking about Christian Wood because Detroit is just so utterly non-interesting right now.
So let's hit the other big story with Detroit, then, because that's a fair point.
Oh, they have one?
Well, I mean, to the extent that they are rebuilding, but they still have Blake Griffin under contract for $36.8 million in 2020-2021.
It's just not good.
And then he has a player option for nearly $39 million. In 2021-2022, which going to go out on a limb and say he's going to pick that bad boy up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, Blake Griffin is going to be picking up checks until 2022. Yes. Yeah.
So, should Detroit try to trade him even if it means not getting anything of real value back?
No, because it's going to cost value to get him off their books.
Yeah.
So, no. This is one of those situations where you are just, you're in a rebuilding situation. You're leaning into like Sekou Doumbouya, 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. You have the years. It's okay. Then it's going to be two very difficult years with Blake on your roster. And that's it. Then that's the Band-Aid has been pulled. It's fine.
Right.
You go from there.
Yeah. And I mean, they're still projected to have cap space this summer, even with Blake taking up $36.8 million.
So what do? You do what the Knicks should have done. What did we talk about last episode?
Yeah,
you're like, hey, you know what? We've got Blake Griffin on the roster for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a ton of cap space. Like this team still needs, you know, some more assets. Well, hey, let's. Bring out a group text for all GMs in the league. who here has a player with 2 years left on his deal that they want to get out of, like, right now? Right. All we're asking for is insert requirement here.
Yeah.
Request, I should say. Yeah. But, I mean, that's... Why not? What are you... Like, they're not going to get someone good in free agency anyway.
Right. No, definitely not. Definitely. Even, I mean, again, they'll be one of the few teams with cap space, but still, they would have to so drastically overpay someone, I think. No one is going to change their fortunes. They have nothing right now. They have very, very little value. I mean, they have Wood, they have Doumbouya, they have Luke Kennard. All of them are great players. Derrick Rose will be on an expiring. That's great. You can flip him at next year's trade deadline.
Right.
They are like very, very early in a rebuild here. So I agree with you that they should not, if the cost you get off of Blake Griffin entails giving up assets, do not do it. You are not in the point where, you know, you're not going to use that cap space. Great, you'll have $60 million of cap space in the worst free agent class possibly ever. Woohoo.
Right.
Like, it's not worth it. I mean, because at that point in 2021, Blake will be an expiring deal. That will be the summer of this ridiculous free agent class where all these teams cleared out cap space and not everyone's going to leave with the player they're hoping for. Maybe Blake, I mean, best case scenario, Blake plays well this coming season, rehabs his value, and then as an expiring can actually get you something half decent.
Yeah, I agree with that logic.
And if not, maybe someone hands out a terrible four-year deal this summer, and you flip him for that next year. And then you get a ton of stuff in addition to that because you're willing to take on the bad contract.
I would argue that that is... exactly the plan that should be there. Now, I wonder, though, if you re-sign Christian Wood, do you accelerate your timeline a little bit? Because he is like a year away from entering his prime.
Mm-hmm. I don't think... I mean, he's not... He's good. He's very good. I don't think he's transformative in the sense that like he alone can boost you into playoff contention.
I agree with that.
So... I guess it depends on the length of the deal. If you're in terms of, do you accelerate their timeline? Well, if you sign him to a 2 year deal, then yeah, you're going to want to try to compete a little bit more quickly than if you sign him to a 4 year deal where you have more leeway.
But he is going to help you win games.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're not going to be, I don't think you'll be one of the worst teams in the league or like, you know, top bottom three team in the league.
Right. I mean, I think if this guy got a starting role, he is it's very difficult to me for me to not see him end up averaging like 20 and 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think right around there, wasn't he?
Oh, he was at 22, 10 and a half, and the year before he was at 25, 12.
Yeah.
I mean, this dude is just going to put up scoring numbers and rebounds, and he's going to get to the line, he's going to shoot threes, and he takes good shots. Like, he's always been efficient. So my thinking is, like, if you re-sign him, which would be great, like, objectively, you would get a very, very good player.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder if that can kind of forces your hand. Maybe you'll end up being, like, in the middle tier, so you don't really draft high, but you don't win enough to, like, can afford to draft low.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, right now they're projected to get number five. Who knows what would happen with the lottery, but they'll...
Yeah, but in this draft, though.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean...
If they win number one, though, if they win number one and get Edwards,
mm-hmm.
Okay, then, like, that changes the scenario.
Yeah. Well, just in theory, they have the chance to add another high-level prospect. I know this draft is going to be weird, but, like, someone has to hit, right? I mean, they can't all bust, in theory.
Well, we'll see. I mean, look, do you remember 2000?
Yeah, that's fair. All right, well, on that depressing note, I think that is a good place to wrap up. Thank you all, as always, for listening. Hope you are staying safe out there. Keep up the distancing. We are starting to see some promising signs in parts of the country. So I promise your efforts are not going unnoticed, especially by all the doctors out there and healthcare workers that are on the front lines of this thing. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I look forward to going into like a deep dive on Troy Brown God. Jr. next episode.
God, please, coronavirus, take me now.
Later.